Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. Tim, Michael, Mo, and the occasional guest discussing digital analytics issues of the day. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/analytics hour and their website analyticshour.io. And now, the Digital Analytics Power Hour.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. This is episode 75.
75!
Yeah, is that a milestone? I was not aware that we hit a milestone.
Could be.
We've triggered our milestone aware alert beacon. It's an IoT device we've had specially installed. Anyways, as analytics people, we often talk about having a 360-degree view of the customer. And what we sometimes don't mention is that we mostly want it to follow people around and laugh at their online antics by name. Okay, not really. That would just be rude. But for anyone sporting more than one site and an app and some other stuff, we have a problem. And every internet user compounds the problem because they access all of our digital experiences with multiple devices. And that's what we want to talk about on this episode, cross-device tracking. On mobile, we have Mo Kiss. Hashtag welcome, Mo.
Hi, team. How's it going?
Good. Now, on tablet, we have Tim Wilson. Pause your movie, Tim. And on PC, I don't know, Microsoft Michael. I don't know,
well,
PC. I'm just hitting save on this Excel file. Okay, so let's all set our analyticshour.io cookie to value 67Y324LEF9234LHEO907QEWRQRW. And let's get this show started. So, Mo, as we were prepping for the show, you brought up a very interesting point, which I think is probably best to cover right off the bat, which is cross-device, which is kind of the different devices people might use, but also cross-experience, which is all the different experiences we might present to a customer. So is that what we mean? How do we all define cross-device visitor, and how do we think about it when we're trying to connect the dots?
I guess we all have different views of this. And for me, in my role, I've always looked at it being, you know, you have your tablet, you have, which primarily I would group. I guess it's more about how you're browsing. So we have our two apps. We have an iOS app, an Android app. And then I would class like mobile site as our next category and then desktop. But I know Michael and Tim kind of disagreed with me because they see it really as like tablet, mobile, desktop. But I don't, because I see a native app on your phone as being a very different experience to your mobile website.
Whoa, yeah. Nobody said...
Don't let me in with Michael on that. I did not weigh in. I think this entire exercise is a complete
there
waste.
There you go.
But...
Tim stands alone as being completely against this whole thing.
What is this mobile thing you're speaking of? Why don't people just have their big CRT monitors and sit and share the family computer?
Isn't everyone's house like mine where right in a corner of the dining room, the family computer is sitting? No. I do agree with you, Mo, around the idea of tracking people in between the different experiences. So if you have a website and you have a mobile app, you know, or you have a, you know, in the B2B world, a lot of times you have a website and you have a, sometimes an ERP punch through system or something for orders. Like connecting those things, I think is very important. But it's not, to me, cross device tracking. That's all. But, you know, it's.
So what would you call it?
That's a tomato and this is a tomato. No, it is interesting because I'm not sure I have like. That I call would be calling more like data integration or a customer like alignment or customer integration.
I mean, the fact is you want to know every possible trackable interaction.
Yeah, I want to know who does what where
with you, right? I mean, to me,
I guess I separate it based on I have different touch points that I create as the end marketer, right? Whether that be the retail experience, the phone system, the website, the mobile app. And I do my best to connect all of those as best I can. And then the consumer is creating their own differences by leveraging different devices to interact with those various things.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know, I have a really different stance on this, and maybe it's a little bit of the product hat, maybe it's the environment that I'm in, but there is something about, particularly from a product team perspective, of there's this like, our app users are like this, our desktop website users behave like this, our mobile site users behave like this.
Yeah, I don't buy into that at all.
That's really like it's just another form of siloing. But the thing is, a lot of our tools actually set it up that way because those users are split. Like, you have your Google Analytics account for your, you know, your app users, your Google Analytics account for your website users, and it's split that way. And the reason that I care about this issue and I get really passionate talking about it and I'm really interested in it is because I think it's part of like due diligence of starting out to be like, okay, that's not how users engage with platforms. That's not how, particularly Tim was like, oh, this isn't relevant to everyone. And I'm like, yes, but it's becoming more relevant and it's going to become more relevant as, you know, everyone has the mobile in their pocket, but then they're on their desktop at work. And it's about analysts starting from that point of going, this is actually really important for me to crack, because it's about making sure that we don't silo those different experiences.
But I think, I mean, the debate between whether it's becoming more relevant or, I mean, that's a industry consumer behavior shift. I think asking the question of, is it relevant to me, to my organization now, or will it be relevant in the next 6 months? And that's where, I mean, you are in a pure play online retail space that has multiple channels. And absolutely, if there are people who are defining, if they're speaking about the consumer as the mobile app user versus the mobile site user, that is a poster child case for getting that linkage there. But I am going to continue to contend that if you're selling toilet paper or toothpaste, and that's, you know, it's an FMCG or CPG scenario, and you have a website and maybe there's the mobile, you've got to stop and ask yourselves, are people like that into my brand that they are actually visiting on multiple devices often enough for it to matter whatsoever? Like, I think media sites, absolutely. I am on BBC.com and CNN.com and Slate.com on multiple devices regularly. Totally makes sense. Retailers, loyal customers, totally makes sense. But I don't think we can just say, well, yeah, but that's, everything's kind of heading that way, so we all need to be sweating it. That's what I kind of take issue with.
I don't think it's about sweating it. I think the example you just gave about toothpaste is the exact case that I would say this is why you should be starting off with understanding cross-device paths or journeys or whatever you want to call it, users. Because
no, because I've never gone on
research, I've, and I've, I, this isn't just my opinion. I've validated this with analysis, but people do their research largely, like for me, I do my research on my phone. So I open up my email, I see the toothpaste is on special. I then make a note and go, oh, okay, I need to buy toothpaste. I add it to my group, whatever. But then I end up going and placing my order on my lunch break on my desktop at work. So if you're not taking into the
come on, one, but you're not researching fucking toothpaste. I would claim that you are not having a enough digital interactions for it to matter. You may pull it up on your phone and say, this one time in my life that I want to choose between Crest and Colgate, and I'm going to go read something, and then I'm going to put my phone in and I'm going to go buy it at the corner store, or I'm going to buy it on Amazon or somewhere else. It's not like you're buying toothpaste. You're going to be on the phone and then go to their website and then a week later come back to your phone. Like, I think there's an entire class of businesses that they have less of the ongoing repeat interaction and relationship as much as they might like. And that's why the CPG and FMCG is one. I think some B2B stuff falls in there too. So I think it's just very situational that there are lots of cases where there aren't enough interactions with digital that's not worth chasing.
Okay, I'm going to completely flip this and I'm going to mess up your analogy, because what I'm going to do is talk about dog food, because the reason is I actually do this for dog food, and I know that we shouldn't be basing all of our opinions. I agree that for some businesses it's less important than it might be for others. for my company, nailing this is hugely important. And for others, it might not be as important. But dog food, right? I ran out of dog food. Well, I'm going to tomorrow. Today, when I'm waiting for my lunch, will check the four people I buy dog food from on my mobile phone while I'm waiting for my salad to get made, and I will see who's got what on sale at what price. Then some stage, probably late today, tomorrow, when I remember, I will then go back to that site and I will buy it. Now, I'm spending $120 on dog food, and I do that probably every month. If you, as a business, and not counting.
Wait, so that, but you are, this is not the what, how 98% of the dog food on the planet gets purchased, which is as a CPG. You're saying that you're actually shopping and buying, you're buying from the pet food manufacturer, or are you buying?
No, from different online stores, from different, completely different stores.
Yes, so you're not actually talking about pet food. This is not applicable to the pet food purchaser. This is to the retailer who sells a whole bunch of stuff, right? So it's actually not relevant to the pet food because they don't have any of that data, right? You're going to the retailer who's actually selling the pet food.
Yeah, okay. I agree with you on that. Like, if I'm the pet food company,
you're not
going to
get that retail data.
It's probably, yeah, but then you're selling.
I mean, you are hitting on, it's possible that somebody on this podcast has had a lot of experience with pet food.
I know. That's digital, why I brought it up.
Thanks for bringing that one up so I can swing. But right, I mean, but you have three retailers, and are those all three, or all four of those? So even if it's the retailers, are those all four that you would be buying? You'd be buying online. You're not looking for one where you would shop on mobile and then go in store and buy. Or you're ordering it?
I do sometimes. It depends. It depends on where I am and like what I'm doing. But I don't know. I'm probably not like the typical shopper because I hate going into stores ever, which is why I work at an online retailer. I think the point that I'm trying to make is that I feel like you miss a fundamental piece of the puzzle about your customers when things are siloed. Like that's like, this is just another form of saying like, I've got this snippet, and yes, for some companies it's less relevant. But for the company that I'm working at, and for a lot of companies that operate online in some capacity, and to be honest, like this was actually probably a misunderstanding that we had about our customers, where we undervalued our app because we didn't realize that what our customers were doing were, they were using the app to find what they wanted to buy. That was where they were doing their browsing, adding to wish list, all that sort of stuff, but they were converting on desktop. Now, if you have them siloed, you're going to be like, oh, the app is really great at getting people to add to wish list, but they're shitty at converting. Whereas the desktop, oh, you know, it's like killing it because people convert on desktop. So we should put all of our resources there. The actual takeaway from that is that you need to support your users to do what they want on the platform they want. So you need to make browsing and finding what they want easier on the app, and then focus on making the transaction really seamless on desktop, because that's how people are interacting with us. And I'm not sure people get that yet. I think people just duplicate the same thing on every device, and every device isn't good at everything, and you need to figure it out for your own customers.
Well, you can't be a listener of this show and believe that if you're not exporting your analytics data into a data warehouse for that kind of integration, you're actually doing analytics, right? As the great Tim Wilson once said, no, I'm just kidding. No, but I think I'm not gonna go quite as far as to call that table stakes, but Mo, you're absolutely right, and I think that's pretty well understood that kind of stuff is happening all the time.
But I don't think the tools are not actually set up. I mean, it's getting better.
No, you have
but
to
I
go
don't,
do all the linking the manually. Think, still, yeah, you have to go and pull it in, find a qualifying. You know, point of, you know, oh, they clicked through an email on their phone, so now I have this session and cookie, and I can go take all of those sessions from there and then connect it with all of the email authenticated or purchase authenticated sessions over here, and all of that logic can tie in.
But that's the other leap. Even if you say I've got my consumers are interacting across devices, and I have evidence, and maybe it's just because I've thought through the nature of my consumer, I've mapped out their consumer journey, whatever it is, there's that other assumption that just happens where it's like, yes, the key that you need to link those together, just make sure they identify themselves. You know, I mean, Google trumpeting user ID. I'm like, that's freaking awesome. Except when those interactions, back to researching toothpaste, why would I ever self-identify myself when researching toothpaste and going over to... So I also have to have the conditions where I have permission or I have a reasonable reason to get them to self-identify. I'm selling insurance. Yeah. I'm a financial institution. I'm an online retailer where I've got a decent loyalty program. Mm. I can personalize it. Great. But I would also, that'd be another one where I'd claim there are a ton of companies out there that don't have that. Now that's an opportunity for them to say, we're going to create a reason where there's value for you telling us who you are. But that to me that's a big leap, because now all of a sudden you're designing content and campaigns and programs and the way that you're interacting with your users to say, you're going to want me to know that you're the same person, you know, just like when you're buying your apparel and you want to make sure you're getting your personalized recommendations or you're getting your discounts, I'm selling something else, or I have another relationship, or I'm a service organization and I have to give you some reason to say it's worth me telling you that I'm Tim Wilson and here's my login. And they're definitely, that's a good example, like airlines, right? I mean, airlines, sure. Absolutely. I hope that Delta is linking, because I am on their app often on multiple, on a mobile and a tablet, and I am on their website on multiple devices. And every time I start by self-identifying. So should be a slam dunk. And if it's not, if they're not linking it, they're missing.
This stuff isn't easy though. This stuff is actually really hard to do at the moment. And it's too easy for businesses and analysts to be like, well, it's too hard. And I mean, I'm going through this at the moment where, you know, I guess we need to highlight the value of doing this kind of work, because it is going to be an uphill battle. But ultimately, like, you look at a topic like personalization, like, how on earth do you do personalization well if you have got different silos of data about your customers, right? So you need to have, this is a starting point, but getting the business to buy into, this is actually really important to understand our customers have different interactions on different devices. They use different features on different devices for different reasons. And you can't nail some of that really big ticket stuff that you want to do unless you start from this. And it's not the fun work. Like, finding identifiers to link people.
Yeah, but if you want to have some level of sophistication around how you're interacting with customers and how they interact with you and provide consistency, this is the work. And to your earlier point, Mo, when you have figured out that the browsing and the shopping is happening on the mobile device and the purchasing is happening on the desktop, that is a profound insight that impacts a lot, because what would you have done not knowing that? You would spend countless hours and effort and money on trying to improve the conversion rate of the mobile site, and countless hours and effort trying to entice more people to demonstrate quick purchase behavior on the desktop site. Like, it would have gone totally crosswise your customer. And so that's the risk. Mm. That's why you have to do it. And there's an expectation. The way that I interact with brands, it has to be the same thing. So when I book my hotel from Marriott on my desktop, and when I open up the app, my hotel reservation should be there. And all those things have to be connected. But again, that's another example like the Delta one.
But I think there's a little bit of a leap saying that they're not connected, you're not connecting, or you've gone through all the hard work to connect them, which is a significant and can be a significant investment and can be hard. But there's this other thing you can do, is to say, do we need to chase this or not? Why don't I survey? Why don't I do a consumer survey and ask them, you know, are you? Which of all these ways do you interact with me, of my customers or not? That can be a low cost. Mm-mm. I mean, I think there's one that's just common sense. And I think the iconic, you're like, absolutely, we have these. Let me do it manually just to prove through whatever I can that this is happening enough that it makes sense to figure this out. And now you're down the path of saying, how do I make this where this doesn't suck down all of my bandwidth to try to make this linkage? there are ways you can come at it simply and say it doesn't make sense. They're not engaging with us enough. And I can't in cases where I'm like, I don't have an identifier.
Right.
I can chase, I can dream about all this I want, but if it doesn't exist, it is the physics of the fucking internet. Like, no amount of tying it together.
I think your point on identifiers is completely legitimate. And it is a debate with UX, because UX are always like, you don't want people to have to log in because it just like cuts out the barriers, let people use guest checkouts, all that sort of stuff. And as an analytics person, I'm like, I absolutely want people to log in because for me, it like, yeah, you have that identifier. Right. It makes life easier. But I agree, there has to be a value to the customer about having that identifier.
Now, so what we've been talking about in the terminology so far is deterministic linking, right? Linking people based on some kind of primary key that determines who they are in both places. There is now a set of emerging tools to help you link people probabilistically, right? And so that's where I think there's this next layer that should make things easier. And there's things happening kind of on the both sides, the Adobe's device co-op, and I know Google's doing something as well, to basically bring you into view of the person, not identified person, but across all of the devices they might be using, so that you get that single understanding. And I don't know how that's going to work, because none of that has really come to bear. And so,
and I wouldn't say probabilistic matching being easier.
No,
I would have said
way
that
more
if
dirty.
What Moe's described, the deterministic you say is tough, probabilistic, all of a sudden now you're making a ton of decisions of false positives versus false negatives, and what am I going to do with it, and when is this going to bite me in the ass?
Obviously there's things you can positive. And you can't do with a probabilistic match versus a deterministic one. But if you have you have a competent probabilistic or combined match based on, say, Adobe's device co-op, you know that whoever's browsing right now anonymously has also browsed via their mobile device, because that's what the device co-op is going to do. You at least know those two things about that person at that point in time. And then once they authenticate, then you can create a deterministic match for that visitor.
So do we know what kind of traction
it's been growing. So there's actually a website. I want to say it's cross-device-privacy.adobe.com that actually shows you the companies that are participating in it, and also allows you to see what devices of yours have actually been connected via the device co-op. And I want to say
But even the participating, there's I'm going to sign up because I have the promise that I'm going to get great data out of it, doesn't necessarily mean they've actually
figured it out to use it.
But no, that's actually good to know that it's growing.
I want to say from March to July, very anecdotally, it's probably more than doubled of this year. So yeah, there's quite a few companies that are getting involved. And so it's, and again, this is probably more a US thing. So, and, this whole episode goes up in smoke with GDPR or the new e-privacy draft regulation. So, yeah, we'll just delete this episode. This whole episode is in violation of the EU. Basically, well, I don't know, but probably. But that's,
we'll be sending a targeted email to every one of our listeners. They think we don't know who they are. Letting them know.
I will say this about doing the deterministic linking yourself by doing that work of finding those cookie values or that authenticated visit. That work has gotten much simpler over the last 10 years, just because I was working on this 10 years ago, and we do this work now, and like the very fact of the cloud-based capabilities of these data combinations and BigQuery and being basically as cheap as free, That makes the barrier to doing this so much lower. It used to be you have to plan out hundreds of thousands of dollars in net appliances to house and process all of this data in your own data centers And now you basically can chuck it into the AWS or into BigQuery or whatever, and then just apply the logic to it. And now you still have to do a lot of work. You've got to create all your business logic. You have to create sessionization unless you have the BigQuery GA connector. And you don't have to pay for data feeds from Adobe anymore. So it used to be a long time ago you had to actually pay extra for data feeds. And now that's no longer. And yeah.
Configure it yourself too.
And yeah. So now that's just part of the admin console.
I was having the same thought when you that it's hard, but I was like, oh, this is why we strategically plan the Google Cloud Platform episode right before this one, because I agree that's like the other case. So Mo, I was thinking the same thing, but you're actually have been doing this and you're saying it's hard. So there are challenges, I assume, with actually getting the data linked up, but do you feel like it's relatively easy to actually at least get the data that you're trying to link all into an environment where you can join it together? Like, I see you asking questions about BigQuery and joining stuff. So where's the challenge? Is it getting the data? Is it finding the keys? Is it actually figuring out where you can get the data that you're trying to join into one place?
I've actually, you know, what else is Web Analytics Wednesday for other than, you know, an analytics therapy session? And I was talking about this a few weeks ago at one of our Web Analytics Wednesdays, because for me, the challenge has been when you look at cross-device behavior and like stitching, ultimately, right, your first step is you have to stitch users. And the stitching user bit is getting easier. The bit that I am struggling with is that the data set is then so incredibly big, you need to find a way to aggregate it up and then visualize it. And the problem is that when you talk to people in the business about having this, you know, a stitched version, and despite all of the privacy stuff, like, you don't need to know someone's name, their date of birth. You need to know that this is visitor X and they've visited us 3 times and they came via email and they've looked at these 10 products. The problem is, though, that some of the challenges that I've faced, and if anyone has advice, suggestions, please tweet, is getting it from that raw data point to an aggregated view that you can then use really well for reporting. Because, I mean, the data set that I've spent the last week working with is like, you know, it's so big, I can't run anything on my local machine. Like, you could never open it. I'm doing it all in BigQuery.
But no, that's interesting, because what you're pointing out is that if we look at every one of the analytics platforms or that are collecting data, that there is the data collection and then there's the tools they give you to interact with it. Well, once you're pulling data from those multiple systems and stitching it together, you've completely negated the ability to use.
Yeah, you've walked away all those tools.
So now you're building your own analysis interface.
Right.
And that is, that's okay. That's interesting.
Well, and that's where things like Tableau, Google Data Studio, Domo, like, that's where they fit into this paradigm, right?
Yeah. Provided that you can aggregate the data to a level that can be ingested into one of those tools. Because, like, if it's in its raw format, you can't. It's too big.
But typically, you're creating segments that you then apply to your data that you then report on. And those segments or cohorts or however you want to define them are indicative of some set of values or actions that mean something important to the business. And that's why you're reporting on them.
But that's the gap between you've stitched this together and you have 35 million rows of data before you're bringing in a Tableau, whether it's a segment or a filter, or maybe it's just sampling. You say, you know what, let me sample and get a smaller group. But there is that step that is that aggregation or subsetting or filtering or segmenting step that is a query, right? Mm-hmm. You've got to have the horsepower to do that.
And I'm not good with databases. Isn't that just the creation of a view at a certain level? Like, you're just creating a view at a...
Well, I mean, basically, that's how I've decided to tackle it, is that I built it in R first and the data set was too big to use. So now I'm building it in BigQuery and creating it into a new table. And then I'm going to query that table for what I want.
But that's what historically when we were building data warehouses and feeding stuff in, that was the questions around... what are the views? How are we indexing? So that's interesting because yeah. that was an IT development role where they were, there was a ability to have like performance and speed right. and how do we design. Now the infrastructure has gotten way, way, way more powerful, but not so powerful to the point that we say, screw it. We don't care about that. Just keep the millions and millions and millions of rows and I'll hit it directly. So it's like Mo is kind of stumbled across the part, like whose role is that? Because right. Mo did all right. this clever stitching as an analyst and said, I sort of know how this should all work, but now shit, now I've got to be the person who actually builds usable, queryable, optimized, you know, views that now I can actually go and do the actual work that I want to do.
The actual reporting, the actual dissemination of the data. And that's where...
Exactly. And ultimately, you can do all the stitching you want, but if you can't get it into a format that it can be digested by people that are relevant to their KPIs, like, there's no point. Yeah. So that's why I say that it's really hard. It's about, and I'm learning as I do all of this stuff, which has been awesome, but it also means it's taking me a shit ton of time, which is frustrating.
No, that's what you need is a data scientist.
We just hired three. But I heard that analysts and data scientists are like kind of doing, you know, a bit of overlap with the skill set.
Yes.
So, you know, maybe I don't need one.
And I will say that I wound up over the last few months have stumbled across one of those sort of scenarios. It's a financial institution like banking where there was a application process. And very early in the process, you get assigned this like application ID. And this is all happening going into the same web analytics platform, but we also are capturing the Google Analytics cookie in a custom dimension. And as I started digging into it, what I started to find was that cross-device behavior was happening because I'd see the same app ID show up with different Google Analytics cookies, which maybe they cleared them or maybe they started the application at work and then went home. But then I'd see the reverse where I'm like, well, this is the same Google Analytics cookie ID with multiple applications. Mm. They've started them multiple times. So I wound up spending a lot of time saying, what's the logic where I can kind of narrow this down to basically a user ID? And that took a lot of work once I got that data set, but I'm talking 500,000 rows of data. So I can work with that. Now, like all these cool questions are coming up and it's super easy to get to that. But it took a lot more thought and right. it did take some scripting and R and putting in logic and handling all these corner cases. And I do look at that as saying, wow, there are a ton of analysts, which I can't see how they would do that. And oh, by the way, if instead of 500,000 rows, what if it was 50 million rows? Now that little plan goes out the window. But that was one where I wasn't consciously coming at it from a cross-device perspective. I was just seeing wacky stuff in the data, and I had two keys and could kind of time-stitch those together and said, wow, this is all the same person. So I guess that's actually back to your original point where, but I sort of wasn't consciously looking for it, but I wound up being able to go back to the stakeholder and say, you realize I can actually tell you how many people seem to be starting this process multiple times before they complete it. And I can tell you how many people seem to be going through the process on either at least multiple cookies, which could be multiple browsers, but there's a good chance looking at the timestamps, this is daytime versus evening. But again, that was a banking scenario.
But see, Tim, that almost sounds like you're agreeing with me just quietly.
It's the corner case where there's an ID created. So, yes, Mo, and that was...
We all agree.
I was pretty excited when I found it.
We all agree. We just don't call it cross-device tracking.
Yeah, potentially. But, okay, I was just going to say, this is a point that Michael made earlier, which I agree with. This work is really, like I said, I found this work really hard, really challenging, but ultimately very rewarding. And it's rewarding in terms of the impact those insights can have on the business. And you've just given a really great example there, Tim. And I mean, I have a similar one where, like I said, we found that our app was really used for a lot of browsing and all that sort of stuff. We also found that our mobile site was typically where people had their first ever visit with us. Now, when you take that away as a product team and you go, oh, so basically, like, to summarize, we found that the mobile site is where people have their first ever visit. The app is where people are really, really deeply engaged with us. And the desktop is where people do their admin tasks. It's where they place their orders. It's where they update their, you know, subscriber preferences, all that sort of stuff. And as a product team, to be able to go away and be like, okay, this is actually the purpose of our mobile site, is to be really clear for new visitors, or like the purpose of our desktop is to make those admin tasks easier.
Yeah.
Like the value that brings to a business is huge. And the message that I'm trying to give to our listeners, particularly analysts in a similar position to me, is that this stuff is really hard, but it's ultimately really worth it. And yeah, I just think that's the takeaway.
All right, great show, everybody. This is perfect.
Clean there.
I'm going to stop. I felt like that was an awesome bow that you just put on it, Mo. Like, that's exactly right. Yeah. Very difficult, very worthwhile, and some really amazing examples from your experience of how you guys are actually doing that. What I've also found is that as you do this kind of work, it levels up the conversation and the way you're, because typically businesses look at customers, not visits or visitors. And when you're able to take the digital metrics you've got and connect them to how the business is talking about customers, you make so much more sense to other people in the business. And suddenly you're having a lot of traction with the data analysis and insights that you're providing. And that's something I've experienced for sure. But we do need to do last calls. Who wants to go first with their last call? Actually, you know what? Forget both of you. I'm going first because I think Mo has a really good one, and I'm afraid Tim might be...
Dibs on second.
I feel like there's hype. There's hype now.
There's hype. Yeah.
I think Mo thinks she has the best last call that's ever in the history of mankind.
No, I funnest, think it's best, the funnest. Same thing. Okay, I am
aspirationally last calling a conference that I would like to attend, maybe even next year, if I can make the appropriate case. It is the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference, and I don't have any... I mean, I like sports as a fan. I'm not doing sports analytics. I'm an analytics person and I like analytics. And so the combination of those two things, I think I would find endlessly interesting. And you might remember, if you've been a longtime listener, Ben Gaines was our guest on our first year of the podcast and was talking to us about sports analytics and things like that. And he's attended this event actually
multiple times.
Yeah, many times. And so I'm really intrigued. And so I'm kind of like starting to scheme right now at this time of year. So because it's February 2018 in Boston. So if you are a sports fan and you love analytics, definitely something to take a look at. What about you, Tim?
So my last call is because let's just pretend that I read it very quickly and there's a lag in when the actual show comes out. But I recently finished Jim Stern's latest book, The Artificial Intelligence for Marketing, Practical Applications. And I really enjoyed it. So I've started using it when I'm talking to people about machine learning and AI and data science and R, of saying this is a good way to get inspired. He has gone through an insane number of interviews and papers and books. And so there are tons of like examples and quotes of people. So I actually found it to be really interesting. And he puts it in the book pretty early on. He makes the comment, he says, this stuff may seem like it's over the horizon, and it may be, but it's just over the horizon. So I sort of found it a little bit of kind of validating that, a lot of the stuff we've been talking about around the data science and reinforcement learning and AI and agents is all stuff that really is
all coming. Happening.
That all stands alone, yet I also... Just from podcast interest, we are actually called out on page 263, basically because Christopher Barry was on, and there's like a 3-paragraph quote from him. So it's not that we actually did anything. It was just scrolling through the acknowledgments. There are multiple of our past guests who are credited there. So I'm like, hey, I think we're getting some good people.
Yeah,
so
it's just
that was all kind of cool
validation that we picked good guests. Good looking out.
Sometimes make guests into hosts.
Very, very rarely, Mo. Very rarely.
I don't know that we have enough data.
That's a qualitative data set, not a quantitative one.
Yeah. I think it's a binary one because we're dealing with ones and zeros.
There you go. Okay, Mo, what is your last call? We're all... Yeah.
Knock us out of our chair.
Let's interrupt Mo a couple more times so the audience is just like, let us know what it is already.
Let her say what it is.
Okay, sorry. Okay, Mo.
I'm concerned because I'm worried. Like, I'm worried everyone will have heard of this, and I've only just discovered it. So for me, it's like this is the coolest thing
ever.
It's
not Rick and Morty, is it?
But
you've already talked about Domo.
Has anyone heard of?
Sorry.
No, but this is way more fun. So this is using a neural network to recognize doodling. So that's hint number one. Have you got it yet, guys?
Yes. Yes. It's the Google.
The Google Quick Draw. I am obsessed with it.
It's awesome.
Punt. See, now I feel like it's a letdown. Now, actually, Rod, our next guest, is the one that introduced me to this. And I have spent countless hours on my phone sitting on the couch, like drawing sheep. And anyway, it's super, super fun. So if you need a little bit of distraction, I highly recommend checking it out.
See, when I sit and try to draw it on my desktop and realize that that is like, I am not a great drawer as it is, but try to do it with a touchpad, and it really – but I've actually gotten a couple of my kids kind of hooked on it as well. But then I tried to talk to about how it's AI in work, and one of them has continued to be kind of intrigued by what
I did. I messed with it for a little while, and then I realized I am literally training a computer to take over the world, and I stopped.
So you gave up. Okay.
Yeah. Also, I'm like Tim, I'm an even worse artist. Anyway.
Which is still what's impressive, that there are many, many other shitty artists out there, because it can tell that this is a corncob pipe from what I drew looked like an oak tree.
Pretty impressive.
So the point is that we're never going to build up any of my last calls ever again, because I feel that was like a...
No. What? No.
No, there, good last there are a ton of listeners who have not heard of that, and this will make them, like, it is both addictive and cool. And it's AI. I mean, that's the thing is that it's, that if you read on kind of what it's doing and how it's doing, it's some of the stuff we've touched on past episodes. Like, it's mind-blowing, not just that it's cool, but the actual under-the-hood stuff that's going on is pretty slick.
We'll set up a vote in the Measure Slack, Mo, about who has the best last calls, and we'll try to stack the vote in your favor. No problem. Anyway, as you've been listening, I hope you found something worth chiming in about, because I think tracking visitors across devices, you know, of course, as you're listening to the podcast, if you should start listening on your computer and then switch to your phone in the car, we are tracking that. No, we're not. We just get 2 downloads, and we thank you. But we would love to hear from you, because that kind of qualitative data is all the data we need to keep our little podcast going. So reach out to us. Let us know what you thought. And you can do that on the Measure Slack. It's a great place to do it. Our Facebook page, our website, analyticshour.io, or on Twitter. And I have 2 co-hosts on the show. You may have met them. Mo Kiss. Only slightly a relation, but not Michelle Kiss. Just Mo Kiss. And Tim Wilson. And on their behalf, I'm telling all of you analysts out there to keep on analyzing.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Measure Slack group. We welcome your comments and questions. Visit us on the web at analyticshour.io, facebook.com/analyticshour, or at analyticshour on Twitter.
So smart guys wanted to fit in, so they made up a term called analytics. Analytics don't work.
Yeah, Tim, we question your device choices.
Oh, it was bad. It was bad.
That's terrible. That's interesting. That's very interesting. See, it's a fine point.
I'll just be the naysayer when Mo's like, small to medium-sized businesses, that's a super unique niche you've identified there, Tim.
No, it's like, who needs bricks and mortars?
Because mortars have a plural in Australia. We're still trying to learn the language.
I was hoping you would let that slide and just ignore it, but nah, there was no sliding.
What makes you think that we're ever going to let any slip of the tongue slide?
Yeah,
ever.
We do need to talk about editorial control of the outtakes.
We had Web Analytics Wednesday last night, and I was like, I'm not going. And then I was like, I'll just stop in for one drink.
What do you do to the journey? You don't chase a journey. I'm going to chase that journey.
Yeah, okay.
You take a journey.
Yeah.
Plot the journey. Report the journey.
I don't know. We'll come up with witty stuff after. Oh, damn, that was such a good point, and I missed the whole rant. You literally were frozen like this, being like...
Oh, hey, I can hear Tim. Never mind.
Son of a bitch. I was just about to...
Oh, this is a shit show.
So, Mo, are you or have you ever actually been Michelle Kiss?
No, we are two separate and distinct human beings, but related by birth.
Related by birth. Okay, are you, is one of you the parent of the other? Are you cousins?
That would be creepy, but no, we're sisters.
See how I had all different devices, Tim, and you totally screwed that up. Yeah. Nobody remembers that Mo was on mobile, hashtag welcome, or you were on...
But there was a bit of alliteration going on, so I feel like that's going to be saved in the memory bank.
Mobile Mo, tablet Tim, and... I saved it. I totally saved it. Or we planned it all out. Okay, just never mind. Just we'll cut out that whole thing. Well, we have certainly had a feisty time of it, but I think we ended in a nice place.
Well, the way I wouldn't describe it feisty, I would say it was more like a real lobby bar conversation. Like,
you can reach out to us on many different websites and devices, none of which we're tracking. So, those are our Facebook page.
Anytime you click through on a link to our website, if you before you let it load, change the UTM_content=  parameter to be your email address.
Yeah. And boom, we're violating Google's PII. Okay. Yeah. So we need you to hash your email address and then send us the one-way key so we can unhash it. No. Yeah. And then Lee created the Measure Slack. And then while I was still an admin, I uploaded my Drunk Helms GIF.
Mobile, tablet, and desktop.